Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, owner of BlockBod, and I'm joined today with Allison Mott with AMCPA. How are you doing today, Allison?
I am well. Thanks for asking.
Good. I wanted to shout out as well. Part of the reason I'm doing this podcast is because our mutual friend, Kevin Kwok at J29, said I'd be a good podcast host. So I want to give a shout out to them at J29. He's pretty awesome, isn't he?
He is. He's got a really good team over there too. So very lucky to have them to partner with.
Love it. So Allison, we talked a little bit before this. Kind of tell me a little bit about yourself and your business, how big your team is, and what some of the people are you serve.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm the owner and founder of AMCPA. We are a full service CPA firm. So we do accounting and bookkeeping for small to mid-sized businesses, and then business taxes, and then individual taxes as well. We have a team of 8 employees, including myself. We just celebrated our fifth anniversary yesterday. So we've been in business for 5 years as of September 19th.
That's so exciting. We crossed our fifth one officially here in August. So we're...
I love that we're like so close in start dates. Yeah.
That's exciting. So kind of tell me about what was your dream initially? You know, you think kind of about high school or whatever, when everybody's asking you, what are you going to be when you grow up? Can you tell me about that first dream?
Yeah, I remember as not high school, so younger than that, I wanted to own a restaurant for some reason. I had like very detailed ideas of like this like kind of quirky, fun restaurant that I wanted to own. In high school, I will say I had less of an idea. I genuinely did not have like a dream of like, I knew I wanted to go to college. I'm definitely like a book smart kind of person, but I did not know. I'd never taken an accounting class. So that had never, crossed my mind as a path. So I can't really say that like in high school, I was like, yes, I'm going to do this. My first major, I declared public relations. And I took an accounting class, second semester of freshman year, and it just like clicked. Like, my brain was so happy in that class. And I remember just doing exceptionally well. When I was like, okay, this might be the material for me. The first test I got 102% on, and I was like, yeah, well, it was pretty easy. Like, I bet everyone did pretty well. It was like a 500 person lecture room. And when she came in to present the test and kind of go over it with us the next day, the average was a 60. And so it kind of was that I was like, oh, maybe this isn't something that everyone gets, like, but this makes perfect sense with my brain. So after that class, I decided to declare accounting as a major. So I really didn't know. One of the reasons that I picked it is because I was 18, right? Which feels very daunting at 18 to figure out what you want to do, where you want to live. Like, you know, I just had no real idea of what that looked like, but I was really good at accounting. And I knew that every business would need an accountant, and I could live in any city and be an accountant. So it felt very like flexible in that way, but also very stable in the fact that everyone needs an accountant. So it just kind of checked a lot of boxes for me. I did not at that point think like, yes, I'm going to open my own firm. That was never on my list.
So are you from Kansas City originally then?
Yeah. Okay. I was raised in Lee Summit. So Lee Summit High School.
Fantastic. Okay, cool. I was just curious because you said you could do it from anywhere, which you can, had a moment of realization of.
Yeah. Well, I had gone to freshman year. I went to Oklahoma State. So, and I was like at that point that I was like, well, I transferred from Oklahoma State to Kansas State sophomore year. And that's where I got my undergrad and my master's from. So I was in that moment of like, I thought I was going to like Oklahoma more than I did. It just really wasn't a fit for me. So I was in the place of like, am I transferring? Am I staying? So at that moment I was like, yeah, but no matter where I end up or where I may want to end up, maybe I want to end up on a coast, that career path would work there, where a lot of, you know, some ag stuff might just be Midwest based that you wouldn't be able to take that skill set elsewhere.
Right. So explain to me then, what was your kind of transition from college degree into your first kind of job, and how did that look? And then it's interesting too to discover, have you taken like a personality test? Oh, I'm sure you've probably taken a couple, but if you taken one that in your mind kind of described, this is why I'm wired for accounting, it's obvious.
I don't feel like I've ever taken a personality test that told me, yeah, this is why you're an accountant, but it does kind of like click to why I'm a business owner and those kind of things. I think the Enneagram test is my most like one that I feel the most pulled to. So I'm a Enneagram 8, which is a challenger, wing 7, which is an enthusiast, right? So I like challenges and goals, and I'm enthusiastic about it. So, which kind of perfectly meets like being a business owner and wanting to grow the business and always pushing forward and having a lot of goals on my plate at all times. Or like running half marathons, like all the things that I do kind of line up to needing goals, and things to kind of keep me on track so I don't get complacent. So I stayed for my master's at K-State, because to get the CPA, you need to either dual major or have a master's. So it's 150 credit hours. So I stayed for the master's program at K-State. And my first job, I went into a big four accounting firm. I just had this question last night. So not everyone knows what a big four accounting firm is. There are four of the largest accounting firms in the world. We call those big four. They do audit and tax predominantly. They're kind of known for having a burnout culture. So, and you know, no hate to them, but that's just kind of how they set up the model. They really call it like a 2-year resume builder. You get in, you work an ungodly number of hours, and you have it on your resume, and then you go elsewhere. So I did that. I thought that I would beat the 2-year odd, because I was like, no, I think this is like, I'm meant to do this career. Like this is, I also am a workaholic. Like I love the challenge. I love all of those things. So I did not think that 2-year stat would apply to me, but I didn't even make it 2 years. I hated it so much. So.
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of a newer dichotomy for me, because I've always been in small business for the most part. And Alex Hormozi, I think it was, describes a culture, which I think is what you're describing, in where in order to ensure that you have all A players, basically, or as many as possible, you just set the bar so ungodly high that you either achieve it or you die. But the problem with that culture is nobody is going to go over that bar, and it feels rather toxic and cutthroat in some cases.
Yes. And I think they like get there or die was exactly the kind of how I'm built. And I like just pushed myself to the brink of like body was not gonna let me continue to like work those hours. I mean, because I was also super young. So like trying to figure out, so I was like 22, 23 when I started the job. So trying to figure out all these new life skills, all of that at the same time as working just around the clock, kind of never feeling like I was ever caught up or like achieving a goal, really starts to wear on you. But yeah, no, I would just push myself and think like, I still remember like trying to pull all nighters to get work out the door. Cause in college you could, but then you're like, yeah, but now you have to go to work for another 14 hours during the day. So you do need sleep. But there was just so much work that it was kind of impossible to get it all done in the time frame that was set out. But.
Right. Yeah. Quick, interesting sidebar. I was a challenger the first time I took the Enneagram test. And with balanced wings, and now I'm an enthusiast with balanced wings. So
what's on the other side? What's so the 9 is the peacemaker. So that you're what's the
7?
Seven,
I think, is the enthusiast.
Yeah,
I don't know what a 6 is off the top of my head.
Because that would be your other wing, right?
Well, it's balanced wings, so it's theoretically. I think it's. I mean, unless I'm wrong, balanced. Unless I might be completely wrong, but I thought balanced was you essentially have all wings as just kind of a side, but it might be.
Oh, I think your wings are just the 2 to the each side. So like
2 would be either side. Okay. So if it's balanced wings, okay. Right. We're going to have a moment then. We're going to Google this live, folks. Enneagram.
Figure out what a 6 is. Yeah.
Okay, so the loyalist.
I
so
can
a
see
little bit of
that.
loyalist and a little bit of challenger. I can see that too,
Yeah,
actually.
I can totally see that. Yeah, which actually makes sense because now that I think about it, if my other wing option is a peacemaker, I don't think I'm a balanced wing in that.
That's fair.
The enthusiast makes sense. I don't think being a peacemaker would work too well sometimes when growing a business, but sometimes a little bit, but you gotta also have some very firm boundaries.
For anybody that doesn't know, the Enneagram test is a fun one. It gives you a number and a personality, and probably the coolest thing about it is, one, some scenarios it talks about generalities, it gets pretty specific, and it gets pretty specific about your shortcomings too.
Yes.
Which is always, for me, this eye opener of, it's the most fun to have, for me at least, to have one of your friends, your spouse or whatever, your partner, take the test and be like, that is as descriptive as it gets
and
for you.
And when you make somebody take the test, verify that it really is the free test, because we get tricked every time. One time we had somebody take, like, oh my gosh, they filled out like 100 questions and then they got to the end and it was like, for your results, pay us $20.
And oh, he was like, yeah.
No. But I remember because I took the exact same test and I put like so much time into it when they were like, well, now you got to pay for it. It advertises it as free, but then when you get to the end, it's not. I ended up just paying for it because I was like, no, I need to know now. I've put this time and effort in. So they did trick me and I bought the results, but.
So I bothered to Google it. It's a weird site, but because there's a lot more stuff to it for sure. But Electric Energies is the one that I took it from. That's free. Okay. That I like the result for that. But okay. We went a little bit off here. I'm going to have to circle back. So, okay. So the big four, and you experienced some burnout there. Kind of tell me about some of that. Well, and it's interesting too. I like how you weren't discouraged to the point to where you're like, accounting is not for me.
I definitely got there. I definitely got there.
You got close?
Oh yeah. Cause when I ended up leaving, I was like, this isn't the path. Like, this isn't it. I don't like the work. I don't like the culture. Like, there was just nothing that I really felt like me. And I'd always known, right? Like, I don't have always been told that in college, everything always kind of stood out in accounting classes that I didn't feel like I had the stereotypical accountant personality. So then that experience really like reinforced that I was not meant to be an accountant. Cause when I left there, I left without another job because I was just like, was miserable and I couldn't find time to interview anywhere. And I was like, I got to go back to the drawing board. Maybe I'm in the wrong career path. Like, I need to kind of figure this out. And I thought I was going to go back to school for something. And then I ended up applying at a nonprofit and ended up, then I like refound my love of accounting because I was in a culture that was just better for my personality and lifestyle. But yet I still got to use accounting and it was much more like financial statement, the stuff that I had learned in school, because nonprofit is very similar to a small business, right? It's one entity running. So you're looking at accounts receivable and grants receivable and all of that, as opposed to this like huge megacorp working on other megacorps that it never really clicked in my brain because it wasn't anything that we were taught in school. I also, to be fair, I also went into a subset. I wasn't in audit or tax. I was in advisory and we did more IT based stuff. So more in your lane, but spending 5 years learning accounting and then trying to teach myself on top of that more like IT auditing. It just wasn't a fit. So.
Well, it was probably relatively siloed, I'm guessing. Like, yes. you either got in front of the client or you probably didn't get in front of the client. And you were given a bunch of paperwork that you essentially had to churn through and spit out, right?
Well, and then when you got in front of a client, I mean, again, I was like 23 years old in an industry that I didn't feel super comfortable in, like on a topic that I had no real life experience doing. So you get in front of a client to go ask them these questions and you're like, I don't even know the words that I'm using to ask these questions. So you're not like comfortable or confident in that space. So the paperwork was almost like, I'll go do that. I'll just go document stuff. But then you also were kind of like, I still don't know what I'm doing. Do you think they know I don't know?
Well, and in tech particular, maybe it's similar in accounting. It almost seems like the tactic of an imposter on the other end is they'll almost throw out just as much information as they think will confuse you. Or maybe it's some sort of platforming thing. Yes. Like, I'm the smartest guy in the room, so blah, 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 blah.
Well, like, and we were also auditors. So at no point has anyone met an auditor and been like, yeah, that's who I want to spend my time with, right? Because they think that we're there to find a problem.
Sure.
When really we're there just to test the system. Like, believe me, as an auditor, I did not want to ever find a problem because it made more work for me. I wanted your systems to function perfectly so I could just check some boxes. But if they didn't, like, if they weren't easy conversations, they didn't want you there. They didn't want to, you know, they could be very, just not very friendly. So yeah. Also walking into a space as like viewed as the enemy and you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing. How would I be the enemy?
Fair. Okay. So that led to some hardcore burnout, which led you kind of back to the drawing board. What brought you to the nonprofit? Was it something where somebody was just like, hey, we need help here? Please help.
I just like looked after I quit. I was looking for jobs and trying to figure out what spoke to me, or if I needed to go back to school, like kind of figure it out. And somebody sent me, it's a forum that just has nonprofit jobs. Somebody was like, you should look there. And the best part is because I was so unsure if I wanted to be an accountant anymore. There's the company I worked for, ended up getting a job at the organization. They had two openings. One was in fund development. So you did more events and entertainment, fundraising, wrote grants. They had that position open and an accountant position open. I applied for the development position because I was like, I'm done with accounting. I don't want to do this anymore. Obviously, if you have a master's in accounting and there's an opening for accounting, they just sent my resume to the accounting team, who then called me and was like, yeah, no, we're going to interview you for the accounting position. And I was like, yeah, I guess that checks out. That makes sense. So I still wasn't even like applying for, they were like, yeah, nope, that's what you're going to do. And I was like, okay. But I went in for the interview and was like, oh, this is just a breath of fresh air. The interview went super well. He was just super personable. Yeah. And my entire experience there was just this, like, you're working with a group of social workers and people that are there for a mission and a passion. And you have some admin people, so you have other people that are kind of like-minded. But it just kind of creates this more diverse culture that is a little bit softer and less stiff than the corporate accounting world. And I ended up just like feeling much more at home and much more comfortable.
That's so cool. Cause my mind goes to what if they hadn't had an open accounting position and you still nailed the interview and you got the position and now you're not an accountant anymore.
The entire world would be different.
And how many people out there are at a big four and they don't, you know, they're like, this isn't for me. I never want to do accounting ever again. Because
we actually, a lot of times, a lot of that actually really happens. Cause sometimes we can have issues recruiting people to come work for us in the tax space because they have burnt out at one of the larger firms. And we're like, please give us a chance. We're smaller, so we do things a little bit differently. You can work from home when you need to. Like, we have other things kind of set up. Tax season is always tax season and the hours are always going to be elevated, but we work really hard to like offset that with unlimited PTO. We have plenty of other benefits, but it's hard to even get people to have the conversation with you when they've had this extreme burnout at these large firms. So like, nope, I've already decided I'm never doing tax again. And we're like, please give us a chance. And nope. So yeah, it happens. It happens all the time.
Well, it sounds like a real difficulty too, because just in talking with other friends and whatnot, it really seems like, you know, it's like, what can I help you with? It's like, we're looking for accountants. It's like, well, that seems like it's a real concern. Yes. Right. Yep. Now in the industry.
We have a generation of accountants retiring, and because the industry kind of it's gotten a bad rap, right? It's this like very stiff corporate. A lot of the younger generations are not going into it because Yeah, I mean, who's telling other people that being an accountant can be awesome? Like, that's just not really out there. It's not this like sexy field that people are going into. And then to get your CPA on top of that is additional work. So we don't really have a lot of people coming into the industry. I remember we had some real hard time. This was last year in 2023, finding people for our positions. And so one of my associates called the school she graduated from to see, hey, can we get in front of your graduating class? Maybe see if everyone has jobs. They had zero accounting graduates that year. Zero. They had zero people graduating in accounting in May of 2023. Like, that's crazy to me. That's crazy. That's crazy that zero people were graduating. So you have an entire generation leaving the industry, creating this very large gap that we just don't have the workforce to fill, which is why a lot of people are seeing outsourced labor and that kind of stuff, because we're just trying to creatively think of solutions. It's wild.
Well, it's also fascinating to me, because I feel like if there were two industries that are kind of like a no-brainer from a, like, if there's anything a business owner should anyone a business owner should trust relatively closely, it seems to be your attorney and your accountant. Seems to be kind of the two sort of like, I don't think they're negotiables anymore. And having the right one that you can trust is going to be, in my opinion, what lays the foundation.
Yeah. But so that's kind of like our mission too, right? Is like, we want to be the face and the voice that, like, there is a livable world in accounting, and it can look like whatever you want it to look like. And it is not just men in suits in high-rise buildings, right? It is also the women and men of AMCPA, working with the florist down the street, working in the coffee shop that you go to every Saturday morning for your coffee. Like, that is also accounting. There's so many different facets of the industry that people don't give credit to. So, like, that's one of the reasons I'm trying to push more of my socials and just be more, not client facing, public facing, because yeah, we need people to see that it isn't what they've made it out to be in their head.
Gonna take off my jacket here.
You're like, okay.
But no, I know what you mean. Because it's kind of the same thing from a tech perspective. I got a compliment once from a business owner, just out and about, when it was like, dude, I just love that you're an IT guy that's out and about. So what progressed, so we have this awesome thing that is an accounting firm that's different from other accounting firms, in that, you know, it's like, don't give it a second shot, small business. And I, you know, I feel like for those that are passionate about small businesses, it is just a completely different, adorable world. For, you know, I lasted about 6 months in corporate, I think, honestly, if I'm going to be honest, having zero say, even though you were aware of all the problems, that, like, the, never mind your ideas to fix it, having zero capability of even applying towards it. Kind of an eye-opener moment for me was my manager, such a great guy, was basically like, we can't fix it either, so maybe tone down the complaining. I was like, oh, that's fair. And, you know, and he was super, he was the nicest guy you'd ever work for, your typical kind of lead first. But when he said that, it was like, he's gotcha. The machine is just bigger than any one person for the most part. Yeah. So,
Sorry.
What was your progression into starting this? What was kind of that final? So you're at the nonprofit, and was there some sort of ousting moment there? And what was the catalyst into, I want to do this?
Yeah. So that was the first nonprofit I worked at. I got the opportunity to leave there to go be the controller of another nonprofit. So a controller, for those that don't know, is, runs the accounting department. So oversees all of the accounting department. So it was a promotion and a big step up. So I took that role at another, not local nonprofit, also an amazing, environment. Really, really liked it there. But after a couple of years, there was really nowhere else to progress, right? Because I'd already entered as the highest role in accounting you could get, and just kind of worked my way to a point where I was like, as a challenger, I need challenges. I need new things. So when I felt like I had mastered all of it, it was like, you know, started kind of looking elsewhere, but really as much as opposed to looking, there was a gentleman that I knew in the accounting world that owned his own firm and was looking to find basically an apprentice to come on, learn his business so that he could retire and sell the business to that apprentice. So I had gotten connected with him, worked for him part-time, kind of just to make sure it was a fit. I would like moonlight during tax season as a tax accountant, which is how I have such a fun and exciting life that, yeah, no. I would do like nights and weekends at the
more long firm. Hours.
Really long hours, but workaholic challenger, you know, it's a perfect match for me. So we realized it was a fit. We were like, I think this is something really good here. I think that we're a good match. I think that I have the client skills that he's looking for. So I quit my other job, went to work for him full-time. Within a couple weeks after going full-time with him, I realized that it was not what we thought it was going to be. It was not the match that we thought. I did spend about a year there trying to like salvage, right? I was like still very set on this goal of like, this is going to work. You quit this job that you really did love for this. Like, this is going to work out. Your dream is to own a business. Cause that I kept like, I would say that dream got born probably when I was at the first nonprofit. I was like, I think that one day I would really like to own my own thing, kind of create my own environment. Like that would be really cool, but you know, not right now. So when that opportunity came down the road, I was like, oh, this is it. This is my foot in the door, my way to learn everything. Like I can buy this business. And so, yeah, I really tried to make that square peg go in that circle hole, right? Like I was like, no, this is going to fit. I know he'll come around. Like I'm just going to stay here. After a year of it just not working and it not working every day in a very kind of loud way, right? When you're like, okay, I get it. It's not a fit. After a year, we had a couple more hard conversations where it was just so evident, you know, when you know, it's like a breakup when it's like, okay, so this is
right.
We're done. And that's exactly how it ended. I'd say very mutually, like I gave my notice, but I don't think in any way he was disappointed. And so I was like, well, I guess if this didn't work out, I guess I'm just going to do it on my own. And I remember trying at the end when I had like decided that a month, I think before I quit, we were in the middle of those hard conversations, but I decided, I guess I'll have to do it on my own if this doesn't work out. So I like tried to force it to work so bad because I was so scared because I didn't have clients. I didn't know if it was like, this was going to be so easy, right? Like everything was already built out. I just had to like step in and not mess it up. But starting from scratch was terrifying because I had to figure out every process, invoicing, storage, like where's the off, like every single thing. But then as the further that we got down and I realized that like those conversations were not going anywhere. And this was just a dead end. It was not going to happen. I started getting really excited about being able to build it from scratch because I was like, okay, well, you also could have bought this business that, and no hate when I say this, is outdated though, right? His processes were 30 years old. And so I would have bought a business and then needed to update all of those processes to
match,
modern. Yeah. And I would have inherited all of the issues as well. And I was like, okay, well, you're pretty smart and creative. You could probably figure this out. And I think that's what's one of the things that has made us so successful and able to grow so quickly is because we truly design the process for where we are now. And we meet multiple times a year. And if something's outdated and not working, then we redo the process. We're like, okay, it's a pain point. How do we fix it? As opposed to just saying like, well, this is what's always worked, so we're going to keep doing it because I've had to do that from the scratch. So it's some of those things that you're forced into end up being your biggest superpower. I don't know. Maybe that's just what I tell myself to feel better about it.
Well, I think there's a lot in there that echoes with me, but like, so like sales, I'm a natural born salesperson, and there was a boss at one point that kind of recognized that in my personality test. They tried to make that transition, which I think would have been one of the best decisions that would have happened. But because I was so used to tech And they didn't want to lose me, and I didn't want to. I mean, it's like sales is this unknown and tech is this known that I enjoy greatly. But it's, that's what I want to channel into that though, because so a couple things, now you got to do sales, which I didn't, I was partnered with the person specifically because I didn't want to do sales, kind of a similar sort of thing. Now we're forced to start over and we're forced to figure out sales, which doesn't matter if I'm a natural born salesman or not. I have zero experience.
Yep.
And so then, but then the other thing too, is I hear this again and again and again, where it's like, it's a, at least for me, it's a pride, it's a hubris, it's a passion. You know, I can do it better. I'm going to start over from scratch. I'm going to do everything the right way. And then at least for me, and I think for other people, you know, when was kind of that moment where it was like, you got hit with the 18 wheeler in that first year or whatever, or did you have a moment where you were like, I can still do it, but this is hard. And I can kind of see why some of the things that other folks do in that way might apply.
Yeah.
It's a weird question, but, and maybe it's just me. I'm trying to make sure it is just me.
No. I think there's a couple things, because one, sales, what I like to say is that I do soft sales. Cause I'm not a natural born salesperson. I also think that I can't convince you that accounting has value. I don't think I can psychologically convince anyone that it has value. They have to know that, and they have to want to work with us. Cause even once, let's say you make the sale and they're still not sold, you did a hard sell and they're like, great, but we still need documents from you every month. We need your cooperation to get some of that job done. So if you don't see the value in it, we're probably not going to be a great match. So I do this very soft sell. We're like, here's what we provide. Here's our pricing. Here's our process. Here's why we think that it's better than the, maybe the last firm you worked with. Here's where we always hear pain points from other firms. Here's what we do differently that addresses those things. But I very much leave it in their hands. When they're ready to come over, we're happy to have them. And I'm sure if you talk to a salesperson who has the background in that, would be like, no, that's not how you close. And I'm like, well, I have a pretty good conversion rate, so it works for us. Yeah, I never do like high pressure sales tactics. I'm like, yeah, we're here, which I'm sure I would kill it. Like a salesperson, I would drive them insane. But that's how we started.
But you're also the owner. I know I've had maybe a time or two where, you know, maybe somebody comes over, like you said, what that, you know, you sold them or whatever, they thought it was going to be great and then it's not.
Yep.
And then they leave. So a part of the value, I think the superpower, to your point exactly, is we don't want people that are going to leave a couple months later, because that's no good for anybody.
Yeah, we spend all this time bringing somebody on and then they're there for a month. You know, like, we want long-term clients, because by the time the time you invest up front, you spread it out over the course of the engagement. Like, if not, you're just putting a lot of time in to lose a client immediately. So yeah, I feel like the soft sell works for that point too, because they have to have that motivation on their end and want to work with you. So if you hard sell them into it, it's probably going to be that exact, like, they're going to leave really quickly. And then the 18 wheeler. So as you know, the starting a business in 2019, the first tax season was COVID. So immediately, I don't know the last time they ever extended it, like, just nationwide extended a tax season. My first solo tax season was extended for how many months? Till July. So from April to July filing date, which is unheard of. The first year they passed four large tax bills to address COVID. The last time before that a large tax bill had been passed, well, Tax and Jobs Act 2018, but before that it was like 83 or something. Like, that's how long in between it takes usually to get tax code out in like a big chunk. And 2020, they were pumping it out. Like, it was ever changing. A lot of it really, I think, was a catalyst to a lot of the older generation checking out and saying, I was going to retire in 10 years. I'm done now. Because it just changed the industry so dramatically. And I was like, I felt like, because it was just me and I didn't have a lot of employees, it wasn't huge. Also, honestly getting a couple more months. Like I was so overwhelmed during tax season because I'm taking every phone call. I'm doing every return. I'm sending every invoice. I'm doing like all of those things. It was so hard to scale with just me that when it got extended, I was like, phew, okay, I can spread the work out a little bit. I've got some more months to pick up new clients. Like it kind of was a relief because it got extended middle of March, which I just stopped taking new clients because I looked at my pipeline and I was like, I think realistically that's all I can get done by April 15th. And the number of returns was very small. But if that's all I could get done, that's all I could get done. You know, like I didn't know what my pipelines looked like before then. So it ended up giving me some more time to like figure that out. Then yeah, then the next year it got extended again. Yeah, I feel like the Mack truck kind of just keeps happening in small, like just hard lessons all the time.
Yeah. It's agreed. It's such a blessing though too, because without the passion, we would never get started. Well, I feel like, yeah. At least for me, without the challenger, right? We'd never make that leap.
Yeah, I mean, I was just reflecting on that yesterday, right? Because it was 5 years. And you're like, man, how many businesses burn out before the 5 year mark? And like, I didn't set the goal to have this many employees by my 5 year mark. I was just like, today I will buy a computer. Tomorrow I will look at software. Like my goals were so small because I was so scared that, yeah, I would have never dreamed that this is what 5 years would look like.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so that's cool to hear. And then the challenges. So we were talking beforehand, kind of tell me about the emotional component, not necessarily just from you as the business owner, which is also definitely something we should dive into and talk about, but also like the I think an assumption I made before we were talking before the podcast, probably foolishly, really, because it's numbers everybody's passionate about when it comes to money, is, you know, one thing I think more of, I never really want to be a pediatrician, largely because while I love kids, it's that emotional component of like, you know, you want to get it all right because everybody's super invested. So it's not like you could just go to sleep at night, and there's way more risk involved there, which there's plenty in tech too, but it tends to be a little bit different because people tend to be a little bit more logical about it unless something horrible has happened. The other one was a vet, like, because everybody's very passionate about their animals. Yeah. I wouldn't want to be a veterinarian. I'm always very, and then there's plenty more out there, but a mistake I think I'd made was thinking that like tech, the money might be almost a little bit more analytical, but the truth of the matter is people probably get super emotional about the financial aspect. So kind of tell me about some of that. You know, I think I've been hit with a big tax bill before. I think probably a lot of people have before. What some of that look like, and especially in the case of small business, you know, I'm just thinking of your average maybe coffee shop, or I started my dream job, right? I'm 1 year in, I didn't collect any taxes because it's not like we started business thinking about taxes. And then, you know, February, March hits. Now tell me about some of that emotional aspect of it.
Yeah, that is definitely the most draining part. I could do taxes all day. I could do accounting all day. It is the human element that it will burn you out. Besides maybe life and death. So animals, medicine, people get really, really emotional and really passionate about their money. So where we may see it as dollar signs, right? Because we do it all day, so we don't have that emotional attachment. And because we don't always know how a client's going to react to us, the amount owed is a formula. And it makes perfect sense. So if you made X, but you didn't pay any in, you'd owe X. Like that's just, it'd be the same for every single person down the line. If they made exactly that, they'd owe exactly that, right? It's not personal. It's not intentionally trying to be mean or hurt you. That's just the math of it. And so to me, math is not an emotional topic. But when you're telling somebody they owe money that they don't have, you could be telling them that their pet is dying. You know, they can have an emotional reaction just as strong as that. So, which sometimes will always catch us off guard because we're in this very kind of, we don't have a ton of emotion. We can't put emotion into your taxes because I can't be emotionally invested into what every single person's tax situation looks like. Like I can help strategize and keep their taxes as low as possible. But I don't know if I hand you $100 tax bill. I mean, cause sometimes people catch us off guard too, right? We hand out, some people make a ton of money and owe a very large chunk at the end of the year. And we could hand out, you know, several $100,000 to somebody and they're like, okay, thank you. I knew it was going to be large. Perfect. I'll write a check. Where do I mail it? You know, like very logical with that information. And we could hand somebody results that show they owe $800. And they, you know, the different person, different situation, that to them is devastating information. And they will react to it as such. And usually where a lot of times, I don't think they think through, they're just the messenger. This isn't their fault. They're not the IRS. I'm not paying them that. They, in fact, have no one else to take it out on. And so we become their punching bag. And yeah. Or if the IRS messes something up and sends notices, I mean, it's a understaffed organization that's not that well organized. Like, we take a lot of abuse for the taxing agency's shortcomings. Or if there's an error sent in notice, oof. We get, especially if the IRS or a taxing agency is telling someone they owe something they don't owe, people come at you with their boxing gloves on. But yeah, tax season, you're already working insane hours. And then you're really trying to just connect with people and do a good job and take care of them. And then you're taking hooks from every single, like it just, after a while, you just feel like it's abuse. And that's why so many CPAs, every single person has heard a person say their CPA has ghosted them, had a mental breakdown, ran off, closed their business mid-tax season. That's the shit that causes it, right? Like you can do a million tax returns. It's the emotional wear and tear that can truly cause a breakdown.
Got it. Yeah. So interesting. That's interesting. And you probably didn't see that as, did you have a lot of that at the big four or was
no.
it?
That no, because I never really had like the same client exposure. Like, and I wasn't doing tax. So we weren't telling them what they owed. I was just the one doing like the auditing of their IT systems. And same with a nonprofit. Nonprofits don't have tax. So I was, doing financial statements, getting grant funding. Like there really wasn't the same almost like news delivery. And where I was prior to starting my own firm, there was another person that handed the returns out and went over with them. So while I could hear those conversations and sometimes them get heated, I never was the one actually delivering those messages. So what a huge learning curve. And still is a learning curve. Still is a learning curve every day.
What are some of the things you've learned? Can you kind of tell me about some of the like, I don't know, I'm a huge fan of psychiatry books to some end. It's just a small side passion. What are some of the things you've learned with regards to like deliver? Like, do you lead with a joke like, and then tell them it's four times what it actually is? Or, you know, is there some ways you've learned to kind of like deliver that in a way that's like,
I would say I do keep a lot of meetings light. And I think that one of my superpowers is also humor. I have a very quick wit. So when it is not about what is owed, I do try to create that like relationship through humor. When they're meeting me before I do their taxes, right? But when you're going over their results, I do try to stay, I don't really make any jokes just because I don't know how they would react to that. I try to take all emotion out of it. And it is just a fact that I am giving them, right? I can't be like, I'm so sorry, this sucks. It's just, this is the result of your tax situation. I did not create this situation. So I'm not going to take responsibility for it either, right? It's not like, oh, I'm sorry that I calculated, because really with pretty small margin of error, if you went to the next CPA during tax season, right, when everything's said and done, you're going to get the same result at every single place. Your potential to strategize is during the year, which when people don't work with us on tax planning strategies and then owe tax, it's also, again, we offer a service to help. I don't bring that up in the meeting. That's not at all what I say. No, I just try to be as keep the emotion out of it as much as possible so that I'm not adding fuel to a fire that could possibly already be there. And then empathize with them, right? If they're upset about it, just validate that that is overwhelming, that that can be a scary situation to be in, and that every taxing agency offers payment plans, you know, and just kind of try to make sure they're aware of options, and that if they bury their head in the sand and choose not to pay it or set up a payment plan, it's just going to get worse. Like, that's definitely not the option you want to go with. I understand if you can't pay it all today, you're not paying it to me, so this isn't like, I don't need to figure this out with you, but here's how you do have some options on paying this. But really just trying to like not add my own emotion to it, but empathizing if they're overwhelmed or upset about it.
One, I know what you mean. There's like, I've got two friends that one of them is like, he'll support me kind of no matter what. And I go to him to like, there's a great shoulder to cry on. And then another one is like, this is how it is. And I go to him when it's like, sometimes that's what you need to hear. So to, yep. So to your point, you know, it's, which you don't know necessarily which one is going to be the most responsive for the person. So I could see is where you'd almost have that sort of angle to it. You know, it's kind of funny. I just complete sidebar, but I think it's interesting. Sigmund Freud, part of the reason we have that whole notion of therapy being like laying down, staring up at the ceiling with the person scratching on notes, is because Sigmund Freud believed that, if I'm getting this right, I'm not hugely, but he believed that even his facial reactions might project his opinion onto somebody else who's describing what they're going through in life. So he wanted.
Makes perfect sense. And as a person who's very animated, I have to be very careful, because while my mouth may be closed, I may tell you exactly what I'm thinking just by my face. So yes, I also, especially if I'm on Zoom and can see my own reflection while having a meeting, I'm like, yes, and I will be very, just like stare at myself and be like, don't act weird. Don't act weird, Allison.
I know. I don't put you mean. It's interesting. Our motto, kind of a motto we have at Lockbot is take it straight from Isaac Newton. If we've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's kind of been a giant in your life? Somebody that, and if you want, you can maybe even pick a couple, somebody that you've looked up to, aspired to be, and somebody that's really kind of helped you through some of those 18-wheeler truck moments where you've been.
Yeah. You know, I think about in those places, I've definitely had some really great mentors who are just like, sometimes just even having somebody to say, who can validate, like, yes, I've been there. That's a super frustrating experience. Like, here's what we did to address it. Or like, actually, sometimes you can address it. Like, but yeah, no, that's not the best. Or like, yep, that sucks. There's also been a couple clients in particular that I've gotten connected to that just live in a different world than I do. And sometimes I just don't even know why, but they will hold those doors open for me to be in rooms that I would have never thought I was going to be in. And you're like just forever grateful for them seeing the value and determination in you and allowing you in those spaces. Sometimes it's who you know and not like what you know. I truly believe that. I think you need to build back it up as well. But man, knowing the right people and having the right people have your back can just be not only like comforting from a fact of like, ooh, I have a somebody I could call if something were to go south, or like if I have an issue with this, I know some people that are connected in this industry or this way. But then even just the people that you meet from there, you know, are just like life-changing. Like I recently joined, our office is in the Crossroads, and I recently joined the Crossroads Community Association as their treasurer. And one of the reasons is because I was just wanted to be more involved and connected in the community that we benefit from being a part of, right? There's a huge aspect. We moved to the Crossroads specifically because it was very small business oriented. It's very local. It's very much in the arts district, which we have a lot of clients in that space. It's kind of perfectly centered between the legal professional services near Crown Center and the finance district downtown. And so we're like, yep, right in between them, but a little offset, a little funky. That's perfectly us. But I also want to be invested in my community that I benefit from being a part of. And what I didn't really realize was even just being a part of that organization, the connections and things I'd meet there would be so invaluable, right? Even like, let's say it's not even from like a client or a growth standpoint, but maybe you have a problem with some little city issue. I now have people that I could say, hey, I got this issue. Who should I contact? Do you know anyone? Like those connections, I'm definitely an introvert. I can obviously be extroverted, but after I work all day with people, I go home and I sit by myself with my dogs and I don't talk to anyone for hours upon hours on end. So it's very easy to just isolate and just live in our own little like accounting bubble. But when you actually like branch out and make connections to people is where, yeah, there's so much value in that.
Shout out to Chambers of Commerce. Small business and being connected to Chambers of Commerce has opened my mind to a whole new world.
Oh, I bet.
The notion that grassroots, I can meet the local state house representative or sheriff or, you know, these individuals and have a vote that's going to definitely matter in, and then have a situation where they can text or email or call me and say, hey, you know, I'm looking at a tech bill. How would this affect you? It's like, whoa, great question. So glad I can have some input on this.
Yeah.
So I wrote down, I wanted to ask you about, you brought up a good notion about being in the room and kind of having a moment of it in the room with some of these people. Are you familiar with imposter syndrome?
Yes. Yes.
How have you dealt with, and for anybody that isn't, imposter syndrome is that out of the body experience where you're like, for me, how it manifests is a small voice in my head that says, who are you? Why are you here? You don't deserve to be here. Run. How have you dealt with that?
I think I just have to, yeah, it's been something I've dealt with my entire career, right? Like, especially, I think women experience it a lot as well, right? We're just like, I don't know. I've talked to some men and they're like, no, I know that I belong there. And you're like, oh, okay, fantastic. But there's also some women that would probably say that as well. But yeah, I think I've had that my entire life, right? Because like people have told me that I don't have the typical accounting personality. So when you're in accounting space, you're like, I don't belong here. How'd I get here? But yes, especially in these places with people that have way more power and influence than I currently do. You can very much easily discount yourself or just feel lucky to be in the room and not be boisterous or state your opinion. But the reason that I'm in that room is because of what I brought to the table somewhere, right? And I didn't just get a lucky golden ticket, right? Nobody just handed me a pass there. I did something. I earned this in some way. I impressed someone along the way. Somebody saw the grit that I had and said, yeah, you should come along. So it's just from like hyping myself up and reminding myself that I earned that spot, right? And I wake up every day wanting to earn that spot. And yeah, some of these people that maybe already had that spot or were born into that spot, I also remind myself that because I had to work to get there, that I'm never going to lose pace at that great and I'm always going to work that hard. And so I think that I value it more because I had to earn it. I had to get there, right? I didn't just get handed it, or my dad didn't say, hey, I have this already, you know, like I worked my way into that spot and maybe I thought I'd never be there. So yeah, I think it's just giving myself credit and being able to take a second and say like, no, you earned this. Nobody opened that door for you and you didn't crawl in through the window. Somebody saw what you brought to the table and said, you should join us here.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we start to close here, I'll kind of let you have closing remarks. I know some podcasters have great questions here, but the truth of the matter is I just like to give you the last few moments. What's kind of something you'd like to leave folks, impart in folks, people that haven't started that journey yet or partway yeah. through the journey, making that march towards their dream?
Reflecting, I think, how do I eloquently say it? No, okay, so I think that it's really easy to look at people that have made it or that you look up to or that inspire you and think that it was easy for them, that they didn't go through the struggles that you went through, that they don't feel that same imposter syndrome, that there weren't a million times that they thought they weren't going to make it, that they couldn't do it, that they didn't go home and cry at night, that they didn't mess up really big and think that they were going to lose everything, that there wasn't these like pivotal moments of like, but the truth is all of us and everyone who's ahead of me and down the road or wherever it is, whoever you look up to, they were there. They've been there. They could currently be there. They could, all of those struggles, it's not only you going through them, right? Like it's universal. You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over. Sometimes it feels like you're getting punched over and over and over again, and you just have to be okay with the punches. But no one has a book on it. Nobody knows everything. Nobody, it's like when you're younger and you think your parents have it all figured out, and then you become an adult and they're like, no, we made it up every day. Every single person that you look up to is doing that. They're making it up every day. They have struggled. They have failed time and time and time again. And that's what makes their successes better. So if you think you're alone in those failures, you're not. And you just have to keep pushing through.
That's so cool. Thank you so much, Allison. Thank you for joining.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
All right, everybody. God bless y'all. Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.